Over the years, New South Wales drivers have been subject to various levels of testing in order to obtain a driver's licence. Initially, knowledge of road rules was tested orally. In 1982, a written knowledge test was introduced, and later the test became available in a number of community languages. The testing of practical driving skills was carried out for many years by the police. The DMT took over driver testing in 1968. David Hill, formerly Chief Motorcycle Riding Instructor and Manager, Driver Assessment, comments on the basic driving test administered by the DMT driver examiners.
The driving test was a what I call a demerit system, which is that you have a list of faults and you go out for a drive and you see if the driver commits any of these faults. And the scoring is based on mistakes made, which, first of all, is a very negative sort of approach. The other major problem is that it depends on where this driving test takes place as to whether there's a likelihood that mistakes are made. Depends on the traffic conditions at the time as to whether they're made. It depends on the testing officer's ability to watch out for between 40 and 50 potential errors all at one time. And so the test was not being delivered very consistently. It wasn't very well documented what the procedure was to be, and it was also confidential. So we developed a system which is based on what we call performance checks. And what it is about 10 or 15 performance checks. But you're not looking for them all the time. We have set courses, and at any point on the course, the testing officer is told to look at specific things. So there might be three things that are looked at this intersection, like do they observe left and right? Do they make a proper gap decision to move out? Did they brake to the stop line properly and keeping the correct speed? And the way it's scored, any of these performance checks, the testing officer ticks yes or no as to whether it's done correctly or not applicable. So if you've got 90% or more right, then you pass.
The driver examiners had a mixed response to the new DART system. Many long-serving driver testers felt that the system required testers to simply observe and check driving performance and didn't allow them to use their judgment in assessing driving skill. Similarly, David notes that some RTA driver testing coordinators were sceptical of the scheme.
One event that occurred was a guy in Western region was sort of very sceptical that it would work completely out west, because we had to set up test courses for this, you see, which was a new concept too. We had to also have a consistent set of instructions. So there's all sorts of inconsistencies, and so that, you know, the idea was that, well, we will have proper courses and they'll say where you give instructions, and these all had to be set up and checked and approved. So anyway, this guy challenged me about whether it could be done out west, and so he said, OK, well, we'll try it in Wynnering. Wynnering is a police station, a shop, a hotel and eight houses, 2 hours on dirt west of Bourke. And so we did work out a course. I mean, what we had to do was to get the local road people to put in a stop sign and put in a couple of centre lines.
The business of testing first-time drivers is often a hair-raising experience for all involved, as Paul Cullen and Ron Chisholm, Unit Manager Driver Training, both recollect.
Many times when I was running camera, I used to always have phone calls about people running off the road and having to jump in my car and go and get the examiner while they get the tow truck and things like that, because, as you appreciate, you can a lot of the examiners take them out in their private cars and they're not dual control, so there's not much, there's only the handbrake to save them in major accidents and things like that. So
we had just about completed the driving test, and this was in the old demerit system, and I was ticking it off looking to see what I hadn't done. And suddenly it dawned on me, I thought, oh God, I haven't got it to do a three-point turn. So I went into a street that I normally don't go into. I just said, look, just pull over to the left-hand stop. So with anything, like we're talking about tasks and competency, but there's things you do, like Okay, first thing you do if you stop, you're going to put a signal on, you're going to make sure in gear and check for traffic. So we do all that, we go across the road. We're going across the road and we've stopped, we've got to turn the wheel. We've looked to our left and we've looked to our right. We put it in reverse, we've got the, and we start going backwards, see? Not very slowly. And she goes, "Oh, gee," she said, "I nearly forgot to look over my left shoulder." And with that, she turned around. And unbeknownst to me, what she's seen this obstruction in the back window. And it spooked her, and her foot jumped off the clutch and she hit the accelerator. Because the car's taken off reasonably quick. By the time I've realised it and hit the dual control, there's all this mighty crash from the rear, and I went, "What the ruddy hell are we hit?" I've never heard a noise like it. So I open the door and look around, and there's all this red stuff and glass, and there's this woman appearing out of all the glass with an apron on. And what had actually happened, this lady was talking on the phone, and we've backed into hit this phone box. And it was one of the old wooden type ones, because they're pretty heavy, these wooden ones, but they just sat freestanding on the concrete slab. And we've hit it and knocked it clean over, and of course over she's went, woman and all. And this woman just picked herself up, and there was bits of splinter and glass and no cuts. And I said, "Are you all right?" And she went, "Ah!" Off she went down the street. And all I can hear was this voice saying on the phone, "Ethel, Ethel, what's happened, Ethel?" I picked up the phone, I said, "Ethel's got something to do," and hung up. That's a true story.
Ron Chisholm explained that in 1968, many former police testing officers gained jobs as the new DMT driver examiners.
When they advertised these positions, there was a whole lot of police came across, but at that stage there was probably only about, we're probably looking at about 40 driver examiners statewide, and I think there was only about 50%, so somewhere about 24 or 25 people got put on. So you still had 50% of the police culture and 50% of new people. The training they gave you was, this is how the administrative system works. Stand here and listen how I ask, as I said to you before, the verbal questions. The in-vehicle type stuff and giving directions you tended to follow suit from the person that was doing it. And there was not a set-down training program. I actually witnessed a couple of times where some people were 2 and 3 days into their training program and got sent out somewhere because they were desperately short of people because of sickness or whatever. So it was pretty hodgepodge in those days.
This haphazard training, as well as a lack of sufficient regulation of the driver testing industry, driving schools and independent driver trainers, gave rise to a number of incidents of corruption over the years.
It's pretty easy to get a driving instructor license. There was no set-down standard saying, you have to do this particular course as there is now. The type of people that came into the system in lots of cases weren't the proper people to be doing the job that they were doing. Mm-hmm. In those days, the only requirement, even though we had a requirement in the 1961 Driving Instructors Act that you had to do a TAFE course, it was never enacted. In other words, it never happened. All you do is go along to the police station, or after August 68, it was the DMT, do a knowledge test, do a driving test, and a thing called impart your knowledge as to what you know about driving instruction. Now, that could all be done with one person. There's now, in 1999, it came in 1991, actually, there's a course that they have to do, training course, and there's certain assessments through it, so it's all measured and all that. You can stop people getting through it if they don't pass the assessment.
What often occurred was that an arrangement would be struck between a particular driving instructor and a DMT examiner to pass all his students. Ron Chisholm noted that these corrupt practices came to public knowledge during the Lewer inquiry in 1979.
The Lewer inquiry came about because of the raising in Parliament by the member for South Coast, a fellow by the name of Mr. John Hatton, about allegations of corrupt conduct of then driving examiners employed by the DMT, and certain things going on with driving schools. The club was one thing, people paying money, people were being issued licences from overseas licences, not meeting the procedure. Now, he actually had seven driver examiners that had made a series of some 103 statutory declarations. A lot of the statutory declarations had been copied and given to the Sydney Morning Herald, and they blasted it all over the front page the next day, as did the Australian and the Telegraph. They just sort of hit the fan in a big way. 98 recommendations that came out of that. Not one of them was ever implemented by the DMT, not one of them. All the people that were named in the inquiry has been corrupt. In the DMT's way of looking at it, it wasn't sufficient evidence to warrant dismissing somebody. And some people had overwhelming evidence against them. And it was just like saying to them, you're back in business, Molly, just go for it again.
Corruption in issuing licences in some cases led to obviously incompetent drivers taking to New South Wales roads. Hilton Wickham described such an instance.
The woman had been picked up the same night that she got her licence originally by an off-duty driver examiner. We got her in for a test about a week later. A senior driver examiner tested her. And he said he had a considerable difficulty extracting the car from the testing bay at Liverpool Motor Registry. But however, when they eventually went out onto the road, it was a real revelation to him, because when he came to one intersection, which happened to be the Hume Highway, where he said, you turn right here, and she did, it was right into the path of all three lanes of traffic coming towards. And then she nearly wiped out a bloke that was trying to overtake her when she changed lanes without a signal. No way she could have ever passed a licence test. And it was on the basis of that that we took action against the driver examiner in question. And then we did a retesting program of others who came from the same driving school registry, and we knocked out several people that just couldn't drive.
Corruption in the area of driver licensing was still an issue 10 years after the Lewa inquiry, and was investigated by the Independent Commission Against Corruption in 1989. Ron recalls.
That came about because the Stay Safe Committee were looking into driver testing, and not corruption, they were looking into driver testing issues. And what cropped up as a side issue were all these complaints coming from people outside the then RTA, not so long ago DMT, from people, driving instructors, people that had actually had these things happen to them, paid money in certain cases. And they thought, gee, you know, there's something going on here. So it got that bad that they then started asking people from the RTA to come in and talk to the Stay Safe Committee. They recommended that the police commissioner look at forming some sort of inquiry. And it just went on and on and on for months. The police had actually got an ex-police officer, and he infiltrated him into the system. He'd videotaped and recorded conversations. Videotaped. So here's these guys sitting back watching themselves, revealing all sorts of contacts, names, how much they made for the week and whatnot. And that went on for about 3 months. There was something like 50 people involved in it. And 27 of those people were all named 10 years beforehand in the Lewa inquiry. But this time was a big difference. This time they did get the sack. There was a person there representing the Australian Taxation Office taking notes. All of the recommendations that were made were either implemented without change, and a whole lot of other things came about it. And that's when they decided, because there's a lot of corrupt driving instructors named yet again too, and that's when we then had the Driving Instructors Act changed a new act came out in 1991, which then made it a requirement that that people have to have training before they can become a driving instructor. They had to go through a certain course. So if nothing else, at least it strengthened up the type of people that were getting into the driving instruction industry.
Since the ICAC inquiry, there have been a number of procedural measures undertaken to eliminate the opportunity for corruption. One change has been the random booking of driver testers through the drive's computer system.